Hello once again. This is Steve and Jason on the Back Porch Education Podcast. Today, we're going to ask, how should homeschoolers give grades? Enjoy the show. Good evening, good morning, good afternoon. Steve, I've got a softball for you today. This one won't softball. Be too bad. Yeah, you know, soft toss. Like, I throw it up, you hit it, no big deal.
Oh, but it's still a poem.
Naturally, yes, of course it is.
Well, pitch away.
All right. This one is by one of my favorites, not Robert Frost, Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. The poem is entitled, There Was a Little Girl. There was a little girl who had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. When she was good, she was very, very good. But when she was bad, she was horrid. So, Steve, what do you think?
That's it?
That's it, man. That's the whole thing.
Well, I'm going to throw it back to you today, given the topic that we've chosen to discuss. Let's imagine for a moment that the little girl is not only the subject of the poem, but the little girl, maybe even a little girl named Mary, has written this poem. And you as teacher, as homeschooling parent, let's put it that way, need to, what's the word we use here, grade it? How would you feel compelled with poetry to always wind up at a letter or number grade? Can you grade poetry?
Yeah, good one. Okay, that's not a softball. That's not a soft toss. So let's take poetry first, because we do poetry at the beginning. I have no idea why, but we do. Okay, so can you grade poetry? Absolutely. Anything can be graded, right? Because grading, the only thing grading is a putting in order, some sort of order, greatest to least, best to worst, most to least, whatever, right? Grading is just a sorting process. So can you do that to poetry? Yes.
All right, and I'm going to interrupt you there.
Good. Yeah, please do.
So if we agree on that, and I'm sure our listeners might have some arguments, but let's start there, that it's a sorting process. It's a way of making judgment, saying this is better or worse than.
Mm-hmm.
If you go back to my example, I purposely chose homeschooling because I find this is probably a more general problem that we ought to address on a number of different episodes, but I regularly run into homeschooling parents who are doing everything they can to recreate their school experience in a home school experience.
Right.
And grading is one of the things, this is what we wanted to talk today about, and grading in the homeschool, I think is, I don't know if the word fundamental is too big a word or not, but it's a, There's some pretty basic differences, and one you've brought out already. I have several different things, I guess, that I can use to sort out a grade with. Is this a better poem than what the student has written for me in the past? In which case, mm-hmm. the grade should go up. But if I have some sort of a standard, all too often in English we refer to a rubric, that in order to get a moderate grade, you have to have this, this, and this, and to get a better grade, it would have this added to it, and so on. I could see using that in a homeschool setting where you're setting out a standard or a set of expectations for the student and saying, as you write, try and reach these things, and I'll give you feedback on how well you're doing. But then there's also, especially in something like poetry, a sense of comparison with others that's obvious in the classroom. Johnny wrote a better poem than Susie, and here's the reasons why, and got a better grade.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes real challenging in homeschool. Even if you're homeschooling several students, they're more than likely not at the same age and thus not at the same development. And thus, older Susie's poem is going to outshine younger Johnny's poem just because of development. So I think, I guess what we want to develop today is what are the likenesses and differences between how one might grade in a traditional classroom with multiple students.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any change in the homeschool setting, or should people be trying as much as possible to recreate the classroom setting in their home school and trying their best to figure out what a B is, or is it a little different in homeschooling?
Yeah. Okay, I've got a lot of places to go from there, a lot, because hearing you unpack that, you know, okay, I'm not going to die on this hill, but I will fight on it. And that is the difference between, like, I want to draw a sharp division between grading and assessment.
Okay.
And the reason I want to do that is because, well, for situations like this and others, right? But here's the root of it. Grading is only some sorting process done by some sorter. So anybody can grade anything. Whether or not that grade is representative of reality or wholesome or useful or revelatory, that depends on how good the grader is.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
And while assessment works the same way, like I think the assessment is only as good as the assessor, a grade requires multiple things, and an assessment only requires one thing, right? So you can assess a single student, like one work from a single student, but to grade something, you're either going to, you need a bunch of things. You see what I'm saying? Because you're putting them in order.
So to put some feet on this by saying, if I'm teaching a class in history, assessment is to a given assignment?
Right. Yeah. So you assess each student, right? So you could give them an assessment of how their work is going. It could take any number of whatever, like representations. And often a letter or a number is the way that we give them our assessment of them, right? So a kid turns in an essay and we say B. Okay, so that was our assessment of their writing.
And you're saying that's not a grade.
That is in that instance. Like, yeah, sure, that's a grade. But what I mean is grading is only a putting in order against a bunch of other things, right? So the reason that I'm like wanting to fight on this is because when it comes to the homeschool environment, I think that there are way better ways of assessment than a letter or a number. And so those letter and number grades, they don't make a lot of sense. Like those letters and numbers were designed, developed in the context of ranking a bunch of students against one another. Well, when you only have one student, what in the world are you doing giving that kid a B minus versus a A minus?
Right.
Unless you already brought up a good point, though, that I hadn't considered, and that is development of that student over time.
Right.
And so I'm already having to back off of what I was originally thinking. That's a good point.
No, but I think it's valid that to the extent that we judge a student's progress within the stay nine type notion of how is my child doing compared to other students across the nation in my school, of course, in a homeschool, that's the issue, right?
Right.
And the notion of whether they pass or not, probably in the next segment, that's probably where we should go is sort of comparing gradation with a sort of a pass or work on it some more until you can pass. I'm not even sure that failure is an option in homeschooling. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that I think it'd just be weird if your child was getting, you know, a few A's, a C, and, you know, a couple of D's and or a D and an F or something like what. Apparently they're putting too much time into one thing and you're not helping them with another. So maybe after the break, we'll come back to that and talk about the overall difference between the sort of grade thing and the deeper assessments. That's probably just the best way to put it.
Good.
All right. So let's pick right back up where we were. The concept of how to grade, so to speak, or assess, give feedback to a student that I'm intimately acquainted with. Mm-hmm. Homeschooling has a lot more in common with tutoring than classroom teaching.
Yeah,
it just has to. It's so personal. It's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I remember a course I took in college where only two of us signed up for it. I was nervous that it was going to get canceled. It wasn't. And nice. So I took a course in embryology, sitting across a table from the professor next to the other student. And it's just totally different kind of experience. It didn't feel like a classroom. It was. We were sitting in a lab, sitting, you know, in a quote-unquote classroom. But the feel of it, the discussion of it, the outworking of it was totally, the dynamic was changed. And I think that's why a lot of people like homeschooling, is because of the intimate knowledge. I know exactly where my child is. I know exactly what I'm happy with and what I'd like to see them improve.
Mm-hmm.
And I can communicate that to them in words and, you know, occasionally red ink or whatnot, markings on a paper or whatnot. But I can directly communicate that to them, which I can't when I've got 20 students in a classroom. The time just isn't there to sit down for a half an hour and go, okay, looking over your essay, here's what I see. I've got to find ways in the classroom to streamline it a little bit. In particular, if I'm doing a good job and most of the kids are doing well, you know, that A usually... If I add that A minus in there, or if it's a B plus, they're going to be at my door wanting to know how to improve it. But
sure,
if they see me saying to them, I'm pleased with this, then that grade is a whole lot of words crammed into one letter.
Right.
But I don't think it's necessary in homeschooling. And so when I see, I mean, I know we use a lot of technology today, a lot of things online that grade itself and churn out a number. And I know that most of us that homeschool work within a governmental framework that requires of us some sort of record keeping. And at some point, some of the schooling is going to have to turn into a transcript, et cetera, if college is in the future of the child. So, mm-hmm. So there's play in the game, but there's then obsessing over numbers and letters that I still feel a homeschool doesn't need to. I don't even know if it's pass fail. I think it's more like, here's where you need to improve. When I'm happy with this, we'll move on to the next thing.
Right.
Teenagers in particular need a little more feedback because they're trying to figure out how to get it all done with the least amount of work. But they've got to be held accountable to doing enough. But even then, I think that the parent has the ability to give them direct feedback rather than feeling compelled to enumerate it or alliterate it.
Right. That's right. I think that there are just better ways of giving feedback, right? There are better ways of assessing. I have written lots of A's and B's and C's and a few other letters too at the tops of papers from time to time. When I was teaching, I had to, and it was instructive, right? It was helpful. It's sort of a snapshot for a student to see, okay, here's what Mr. Dolworth thinks of where I'm at the moment, right? So that's good. It's a, like you said, it's an efficient way to communicate, kind of a snapshot. But I don't know of anyone who would argue that that letter grade at the top is better feedback than the, okay, if we're talking about an essay, then the red pen, the corrections, the questions, the grammar, that you, you know, ask about, or, the feedback that you give sort of interlinearly, right? Like that's, I would just say it's so obvious that that's so much better, so much more instructive, for the student when it comes to writing a better essay.
Right. And that brings me to a point we've made several times before. Got to make it again. Not everything we're teaching in school gets assessed the same way, and thus it can't be graded the same way. In the case of poetry, we're talking about something the student does. Mm-hmm. The writing of the poetry is their ability to manipulate language in a poetic way. And that's something that's assessed, and I think, if you choose to do so, graded more on the basis of ability than on the content side, so to speak. Whereas if I'm in a math class, you either got the answer was correct or wrong.
Right.
And if I've given you some assessment that's got 20 questions on it and you got only 5 of them right, you know, part of the purpose of assessment is not just so the student knows where they're at, but the teacher has some sense.
Absolutely.
Especially towards summative type assessment where I'm taking a look going, did I teach this well enough or do we need to go back over it? So there's content or what I often refer to as science, things that you know can be more easily measured in that manner. Mm-hmm. The number maybe fits hard science, math, some aspects of even some of the arts, what color is it, that sort of thing. It's right or wrong. But there's so much more subjectivity in the doing of something that's got to be dealt with in a different way, whether you're in the classroom or homeschooling. So
that's right. So, okay, I have two things here. That I want to talk about, and I'm gonna forget the second one, but that's okay. In the homeschool environment, I think that one of the reasons that grades are given is largely nullified or taken away, and that is the grade as the whip, right? Oh, yeah. So mm-hmm. I've seen it a lot. I hope I haven't done it. At least not very much, but the grade is often used as a whip, right? Like I'm going to scare you with this and it's going to hurt if you get a bad grade, right? There will be repercussions that you don't like. You're going to get kicked off the basketball team or whatever it is, you know, so you better do your assignment or else. Well, in the homeschool environment, unless you're going to set that up yourself, it's sort of like not there, right? Like what?
I would only contend that the one sort of the big kahuna that comes out is if you don't do well, you might not get into college. And they do this whole GPA thing and you got to get an A and everything. And I know we've developed this some and have much more to say about the problems with higher education. But I absolutely agree with you that all too often in a behavioristic society where we've been taught over and over and over that the most effective way to motivate a child is carrot and stick, mm-hmm. that we dangle the A and we threaten the F, you know.
That's right.
And carrot and stick are both there in the form of grades, which have become, unfortunately, and I decry this in the school setting that I work with, I hate the grade hounds. I hate the guys that that just care about the grade and not what they're learning, why would you import that into a homeschool unless there's some anxiety being caused by I need to do things like school in order for it to be legitimate.
That's right. Yeah, that is the reason you would import it, because you don't know that you don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And so that's, yeah, I don't know where in the episode it's appropriate to say this. I'll just drop it here. If you homeschool your kid and you're thinking about college, I would think long and hard about writing anything other than 4.0 on their transcript. Like, what? I mean, why would you hamstring them? Like, if they've done it to your satisfaction, which they have because they've completed it, you didn't let them go without completing it. So if it's to your satisfaction, why would you not put them in the best possible position when it comes to like college entrance, right?
Yep. And I want to come back to that after the break, because I think that still needs some development. This notion of grading as motivation or discouragement needs more development in this homeschool grading conversation.
Cool. Okay, so coming back, you know, I basically just told everybody, I wrote a blank check and said, hey, just give all your kids 4.0s. I'm going to stand by that, actually, but I do want to dig in a little bit and explain it, because there is an intellectual honesty, right, an academic honesty component to things that we don't want to ignore, and I don't want to say doesn't exist. Like, absolutely, if your child's struggling in something, don't just say that they got an A when it's obvious they don't understand the material, right? Like, there's limits to what I'm after.
Well, but that's the beauty of homeschooling.
Exactly.
The ability to stop, go back, come at it a different way. I know my child better than anybody else. If I can't unlock them, nobody can, type thing. So, right. I didn't understand your comments to be promoting dishonesty.
No.
I think it's shocking, because all too often homeschooling, all we know when we're trying to homeschool, and I guess because we didn't do one of those helpful little introductory things before we began this podcast and don't have it written down anywhere, I should state, I am a classroom teacher who also, along with my wife, homeschools one of our children for specific reasons, and we delight in doing it. So when I'm talking about homeschooling, it's not just theoretical with me. I'm doing it. He's now in high school, and we've homeschooled him from first grade up through ninth grade now. So I think what you're trying to say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that unlike the classroom where I've just got to move on, I've got to keep a pace. You said it when you were describing it for us. You're not going to let him go until he's finished,
right?
And I think that's the key. I mean, there's some aspects of schooling that are never finished, but I'm not going to move him on to the next unit of biology if he hasn't adequately mastered this material, because the next unit's going to build on what we've been discussing. If he doesn't get it, what's in a regular school, then he's going to have to get tutored or get extra help or something. At home, that's the whole deal, is moving at his pace. So I think that's the concern I have sometimes with homeschooling, is we want to recreate the traditional classroom, and it really sets us free to not have to do that. So relax.
I agree.
And recognize that you're in a wonderful driver's seat that the classroom teacher envies, because they can't give it the same second or third or 15th go. You know, their constituents expect them to move at the pace of the average person in class. And some of those scrambling either get left behind or get brought along outside the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. To move at the pace of the average student or this sort of imaginary average student that we have in our brain. I don't actually think it's the average student, but whatever. To move at that pace is to, I think, do away with much of what makes homeschooling so potentially awesome.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So let's focus on the child, and that child's mastery of the subject matter, and then represent that honestly, right? Like you don't, the beauty of the grade is that it's based on, well, okay, I'm going back to grading versus assessment. The beauty of assessment is that it is your estimation of a child's abilities or their artifact against some objective standard, right? A grade, as I've been developing it, is your estimation of a child's ability or artifact against other children, right? Well, when you take those other children out of the equation and you just have one, you're free to assess the child based on this independent sort of standard, right? And or an objective standard. When that's in play, then you're able to sit with the child until they have mastery of it. At that point, it would be unfair to your child, even if it would take the average child 1 month and it took your child 6 months, your kid got it. So it would be unfair to your child to represent to the world that they don't have mastery of it when in fact they do.
Right. And that's not to say that some other kid has mastered it better, but their mastery and your own child's mastery are not being compared in that given course. And so you have to kind of let that go. And I feel compelled for us to touch on this at least lightly. I don't want to press it too hard, but a lot of grading, I said this earlier about assessment telling the teacher where they're at, but that's got a sort of a double edge to that blade there. I know a number of classroom teachers. I've been tempted to do it myself. I hope I haven't actually done it, but I've certainly dealt with the temptation to make myself as a teacher look better by throwing, as you said at the beginning of our podcast today, a few softballs to pad the grade with a few easy A's. Especially if you're a demanding teacher, you in private education, which is most of my experience, you don't want parents paying tens of thousands of dollars and then finding, you know, why does my kid have a C? So there's this real temptation to kind of curve it all up, not with a curve, but by manufacturing some assessments that are comparatively quite easy, and thus the cumulative effect on the grade is to pad it. And I sometimes wonder if that doesn't, or at least is somewhat of a temptation to homeschool parents as well, because they recognize that their students, their child's education is a reflection of what they're providing them. They can't blame the bad math teacher at some school. They can't question the curriculum at that awful school over there. It's their curriculum and their instruction. and I'm
sure,
as a parent who homeschools, I'm sometimes find myself thinking that all through, that a grade is as much a judgment of me as it is the quote unquote student or my child. It's mm-hmm. That's part of it, right? It's difficult to even speak of my child as a student when I think, you know, my son is a much weightier title than my student, you know, having students that aren't my child.
So yeah. Good. So I want to harp on that sort of what is the assessment for, right? What is grading for? And, you know, sort of, well, let's, the apocryphal story, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard that assessments began as assessments of the teacher, right? That teachers gave their students tests, not as a test of how well the student was doing, but of how well the teacher was teaching, because at the time, it was inconceivable that the child would do anything other than their absolute best, right? Like the children grabbed at education with both hands, right? That's the sort of the way the story's told. So lean into that, I would say. Like, okay, realize that an assessment is not only for your child, but also can provide you a lot of feedback to yourself, how you're doing as a teacher. And that's scary for sure. But it's also quite liberating when you can say, okay, it's on me, but we can do it and we have time and we get to make the rules.
I hope that, yeah. I was just going to say, I hope that these things are not, the last thing we want to do is make a burden down homeschooling. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to help folks think through why they do what they do, what's a grade for, and when is it appropriate, and how much like my, most of us that are homeschooling are pulling off of the experiences we had in a traditional school. Homeschooling is, you know, somewhat on the rise these days. It wasn't real popular when I was a kid anyway. So it's not like we know a lot of people that were homeschooled or a lot of parents who did homeschooling. Certainly implore our listeners to get to know other people, especially if you're impressed with what other people are doing in homeschooling, you know, talk to each other and fellowship and get your kids together and work it through together. Community is much better than loneliness. But even if you're out there sort of alone, there's a way to do this that doesn't have to be lockstep, shouldn't be lockstep in touch with what's going on in some traditional school.